Hey, I'm Cindy Fitzgilbert, and this is the Dear Sister Know-It-All podcast. I've spent years learning, researching, and working with all types of natural health and wellness practitioners to learn how to eliminate all the bad stuff and add all the good stuff to make my life as healthy and happy as humanly possible. Now I'm sharing all that research with you, including interviews with experts in their field of alternative, holistic, and natural health and wellness. My goal, to demystify and simplify everything in natural health and wellness. Hi, this is Cindy Pitts-Gilbert, and this is the Dear Sister Know-It-All podcast. Today, I am here with Danae King, and she is going to tell us all about Enneagrams. I want to give you a little bio on her. She was introduced to the Enneagram 10 years ago. She began to find answers to some of her own questions, and it was absolutely liberating. She learned she wasn't broken or heartless. I never thought of her as being heartless, but that the process of thinking from a different perspective to many others. She realized her ability to move with lightning speed from one great idea to the next didn't mean she had ADHD or was scatterbrained.
That's debatable.
All those revelations just meant that she was hardwired for excitement and variety and could learn how to grow into the healthiest form of herself. Awareness became her greatest gift.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Hi, Danae. I'm so excited. I will tell you, listeners, that Danae and I have actually known each other for 100 years.
Yes.
100 years. I won't tell you how we knew each other from her kids, and I used to keep her kids. I'm going to tell it online.
Wow.
I was her babysitter. So there you go. But she's not any older than me. We were the same age when I was her babysitter, right, Danae?
Sure.
It's so good to see you again.
I'm a grandmother and you're not, but you know,
I am a grandmother.
Okay. You are?
I am a grandmother. I have 3 grandkids.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll pick that up later.
All right. We will. So Enneagrams, I have been listening to her podcast and I follow her on Instagram. Her Instagram is Love Thy Number. And I became very, very fascinated with Enneagrams. I'm learning to say that word, Enneagrams, because it's a personality type of thing, but there are so many levels to it. So the more I watched and the more little things she popped up on Instagram, I knew I had to have her on the show. The only thing that I can relate to that is compared is the love languages and all the personality tests that you take when you're at work. And so I'm just going to let her explain what is an Enneagram and how do they relate to numbers.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. And I have to tell you all that are listening, when she first approached me about being a guest, and I knew what her show was about, health and wellness, and she's the queen of detox. And I said, Cindy, I really don't think I'm a good fit for your show because I love me some chips and salsa and a margarita now and then. And she was like, okay, no, we all have that, but everything is about balance. But what she did say was, this is our health in our thinking, and that this was a part of our overall holistic approach to life. Mind health, body health, they all work together. So I thought, yep, I can see me doing this. So thanks.
Well, I am tickled that you're here. I really, really am. So I want to know, okay, there's 9 different Enneagrams, correct?
The Enneagram is, let me just say this for people that don't know anything about it. The word Enneagram simply means a 9-sided drawing. And people get very freaked out about it, I think. A lot of people have an immediate bias because of the word gram, and it looks like something that might, a lot of people say, why does it look like a pentagram? I said, well, it's not. It's 9 sides. So that's the difference. But that's all the word itself means. And within the 9-sided drawing, you'll see around the circle, there are 9 distinct personality types. Now, the truth of the matter is, we're a combination of all of them. You can't put any one person in any one box. But the Enneagram has 9 different types. And if you want, I'll just kind of go around and give you a brief overview of what the 9
do.
Types.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, we'll start at the very top. And if you look up the diagram, you'll see that the number 9 sits at the top of the circle. And so the 9 is called the peacemaker. And they are receptive, they're reassuring, accommodating. A lot of 9s are great mediators, but they're able to see all sides. They have a great gift of being able to say, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. So they're called the peacemaker. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because there are 9 of them. So moving around, Type 1 is often called the reformer. A lot of people have called them the perfectionist. I think that's not really a compliment. They can be perfectionistic in a lot of their approaches, and which is great. You want people who are very detail-oriented, who love organization, who strive for perfection. But the reformer, I like the way that this is talked about in a certain school. So, and I say school, there are several different schools of thought within the Enneagram. Okay, so number two, type two.
That one's me.
That is Cindy, and they're called the helper. Now, that's a wonderful thing, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, but every side has their healthy aspects and their very unhealthy. So a lot of times, people who are twos just live to serve. They live to help. If you ask them what they need, they don't know, because they truly get, in their unhealthy stage, they get their sense of love by helping each other. Once they, you get to develop stronger understanding of the gifts that you have as a two, then you're just truly altruistic. You're helping because that's who you are, not because that's how I gain love and accept.
Do you think they change? Because I wouldn't say that I was like this in my 20s. I would say that I'm more of a helper in my 50s than I was back then. Do your numbers change, or do they morph into something?
Your number never changes. Sometimes we think we're one number and we're actually another. So people will take a test and feel like they landed there and that's it, when actually it's not. You will find the way to understand what your number is by what's your motivation. What is your core motivation? And so I'm often confused with a two, because I'm a seven, but I'm what's called a social seven. So I'm very attuned to the social aspect. I'm very family oriented, very into my tribe. But it's more, it is not from a sense of that's where I get my identity, is serving others. And I'll just give you an example. I have a friend, she is a two, and she is everywhere all the time when anybody needs something done, to the point of exhaustion. And her husband told her, or has said about her, no one can out-servant her. So that became her label, and that would be like an unhealthy aspect of a two, when you feel like that's who you are, not what you do, when your motivation is to be accepted and loved.
So if I compare it to the love languages, which is what I'm most familiar with, that would fall under acts of service, but yet that is not what I fall under with my love language. My love language is time. So my husband is acts of service all day long. He'll make me, you know, bring me food. He'll do stuff for me. He's a service. He'll mm-hmm. wash the dishes.
Oh, nice. I like that.
I know. I mean, that's amazing.
Don't
right
even
there.
Ask him to go any further. If he does that, just settle on that. Good enough.
So he's acts of service, but I do not tend to be as service oriented in my day-to-day life that as far as he is. He's much more acts of service than I am. But then I'm a number two, where I'm a helper and I'm a giver when it comes to helping people feel better. So it's confusing to me how those two are separate. Confusing me now because I'm learning something new.
Well, and that's the thing. This is not a one and done. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like somebody saying, well, what do you believe? Like,
okay.
What do I believe about what? You can't just answer that. You can't go take a test and go, oh, here's what I believe. The Enneagram really is, and if you take a test, it's truly the beginning. It's like a launch pad. Mm-hmm. You're only going to find out by digging deeper and finding out what your fears are, what your core fears and your core motivation.
Okay.
So I'm not going to type you. If this is something you continue to dig into, it'll click with you. We're on the three, and they're called the achievers. A lot of people who are very, very success driven, very image conscious, they get their sense of it. And I'm saying this assuming these people are in their not total health. In your unhealthy state, you get your sense of who you are and love and acceptance by what you are successful at, what your achievement are. If I'm not successful, if I don't achieve at this thing, I can't be loved. I can't just be loved for who I am. But once you understand, I can be successful or not successful because I'm loved just for being me, then you're moving up into a healthier stage.
Okay, so the Enneagram stays the same, but you're in an unhealthier, healthier version of it. That makes more sense.
Yes.
Okay.
And within the Enneagram itself, there's nine different types, but there are 9 levels within each type. It's a whole it's a whole journey. So and I love it. I love it because you can look and go, oh, I see in my 20s and 30s, I was definitely maybe on the unhealthier side.
Okay.
I know from for sure in my youth, I was so scattered and a 7 loves to do all the things all the time.
And now, that sounds like me.
well, see.
And I did have 9 in there. It was the third one down.
So
there is a little of that.
Again, I'm every woman, but we have a home base.
Okay.
So type 4 is called the individual. They, in their unhealthy state, would feel like I'm different from everybody in the world. Nobody understands who I am. Nobody has a story like I do. I'm so unique that I am the only one of my type.
Sounds lonely.
It can be very lonely. Yes, yes. And so as a 4 progresses in their health, they can understand their uniqueness, their gifts. One thing about a 4 that I just absolutely love, and as far as the testing goes, I did take a test years ago. I was like, oh, I want to do that. But that was 10 years ago. 4 was my absolute lowest score. And I've come to learn that because I have this not a whole wide range of emotions, I lean into all the joy and the happiness and all those qualities that make me feel safe. But to dig into grief or even melancholy sometimes, or definitely sadness, felt like wrong to me. So a 4 can feel the entire range of emotions. They are so good at, if you just need someone to sit and be sad with you, they're not going to come try to fix you. They will just understand because they're not afraid of that. So I'm loving my 4 friends because they're helping me understand, no, grief is okay. And that's when you gave a description of who I am, that's when I realized I wasn't broken. Grief was a very, very hard thing for me. And I felt like because I didn't know how to grieve 20 years ago, 20 more, that something was wrong with me. And that is a gift the Enneagram gave me, was to understand this is my natural inclination is to find the positive in everything, mm-hmm. You know, be the life of the party, find joy. Everything needs to be joy. But if it came to grief and sadness, I was shut down. So 4s tell me, oh no, I can go all the way to the bottom, but I can also go all the way to the top and be in that joyful state with you. So a lot of writers, poets, artists are a lot of time, not always at all, but you'll find a lot of 4s because they can find that story. And there's
Edgar Allan Poe,
I would believe. Yes.
That's
yes.
What came to mind when you said poet. I'm like, yeah, he's pretty melancholy.
Yeah. Oh.
And alone. And I get that. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So but they're also a blast. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Okay. Type 5 is called the investigator. And they get their sense of who they are from what they know. Like, that's where they get their sense of acceptance and love when they're not in their most healthy state. So as they grow in their understanding of what they have in knowledge, that they can use that as a friend of mine actually just said the other day, he used to use his mind and his knowledge as a flashlight. And so he would shine that on people so they didn't have to see him. He blinded them by the light.
Blinded them by the light. That's interesting.
It was amazing. But now he said, as he's gotten more comfortable with knowing, okay, people just love me without the idea that I have to know everything about everything. And so now he said, I hope to be like a lighthouse and guide and not deflect with this knowledge.
Wow, that's pretty profound.
It's amazing. And 5s are just, oh my gosh, they're wonderful. And the thing is, they're not going to give you an answer unless they know it, for the most part. I mean, you know, not everybody knows everything, but you can really trust a lot of times that if you go to somebody who has this mm-hmm. as their type, that they love the research. They love the knowledge.
Sister Know-It-All. That's me.
See, you may be a 5.
But no, 4 and 5 were the lowest 2 for me. So that's so crazy. Man, I have to do a whole lot more research.
That's why the tests are just, like yeah. I said, they're just, everybody who has been around it for a long time says, don't lie. Please don't take a test and think that's it. Yeah. But we all do. We also say don't type other people, but we do. So
that's true.
Don't type your children. We do. You can't help it. Because whether you know the Enneagram or not, it doesn't take this to look at other people and go, we think very differently.
Yes.
And if you have more than one child, it's like, these children think very differently. Yeah. But this gives language. Yes. To me, that's what the beauty of this is. This gives language to what we know in our gut. That's, you don't think like I do. Men are from Mars.
Yeah, Venus. Yeah. Venus for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. I heard you say it. You were talking to Doug, your husband, mm-hmm. on your podcast. And you were saying that it helps open up that language, which is kind of what the love languages did for me. I learned I was not crazy because I learned how to appropriately ask for what I needed.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't that I learned what his love language was or what his Enneagram was. It was that I learned how to ask for what I needed, and I learned how to recognize what he was giving. So when he was doing acts of service, I mean, good grief, the man was washing dishes. I learned to recognize that. I loved that you said that, because that to me is why that's why I wanted you guys on this show. And Doug could come back if he wanted to. But if anybody's out there listening, I wanted people to understand that just because you don't understand each other doesn't mean you can't.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yes. And as even Doug and I had been married 20 years before he got in to his understanding. He's listened to me talk about it. Of course, he knows a lot because we talk every single morning for about an hour.
That's awesome.
Over coffee. So, yes.
A lot of husbands and wives don't do that anymore.
Well, I would highly recommend it if you can block out some time, conversation. So we knew we thought differently about things, but it was like, finally he said, okay, I want to know what it is. And it's like a light came on for both of us to be able to say, I know what you're saying. I know why you feel this way. And to me, I equate it to going into a foreign country and trying to communicate, you know, right? It's like basically you get, you know, I want to eat. You can do sign language, but to understand the heart, that's what this did for me.
That's awesome. That's beautiful, actually. It's beautiful. All right. So what are we on? Number five, number six.
Number six, they are called the loyalist. And sadly, a lot of times they get called like a worst case scenario people, which is so negative. It makes me sad. But because they, man, when they are the best team players, they love, like a lot of sixes are in the military. They love the structure, corporate people who have sixes. And this is where they get labeled worst case scenario. So say you're having a marketing meeting and somebody comes in and says, I've got a great idea. Let's implement it today. Well, the six will say, okay, what happens if we don't think of this first? So you want a six on your team because they will go all the way through the whole process and say, this could happen if we don't do this. So they're not killjoys at all.
Realist? A word? Okay, a realist.
Very much.
Okay.
I heard one girl who's a six say, as soon as I get on a plane, I know where all the exits are. They are great with thinking ahead. If something should happen, I want to know the escape route.
So do they get called Debbie Downers a lot?
Yes. But a healthy six is a wonderful, all of these people are great companions, but yes, they worry a lot.
Okay.
And about what could happen. And then there are those of us, and I would be one of them, who's like, let's do this now. younger days, no thinking through about, well, this might happen if we don't think
right.
through.
Yeah.
So anyways.
You learn a little bit with age.
Exactly. And that's why when you take a test, if you'll take it from like when you were in your 30s, then you're going to get a better picture of, okay, I can see how, yes, this is how I was. This is how I was. Because when you take it in your older days, hopefully you have matured some.
Right.
And you're not quite as...
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. Okay, getting on through with sixes. Seven is called the enthusiast. I'm a seven.
Oh.
I'm a diehard seven, but I feel like I've grown a lot, and the Enneagram has helped me realize I don't have to be the life of the party. I don't have to. When there's silence, it's not up to me to fill it. That's been a big thing because I thought, nope, you're not having fun. You're not having fun. I need to make sure you're having fun. And this has been such a revelation to me that everybody doesn't have the same type of what's fun for me is not fun for everybody.
Right.
So we're often labeled shallow, scattered, because we have a lot of thoughts all the time. Great ideas. So as I've matured, I've learned to maybe settle into, you know, two or three of them at a time and try to continue to not be so attached to the idea that I have to be the enthusiast. And the last one that is on the Enneagram is the challenger. I love
what number is that?
That's the eight.
Eight, okay.
I love to talk about the challenger because I have such a beautiful description to show you what an unhealthy and a healthy eight. So the eight is called the challenger. They're very aggressive. They come across very harsh sometimes. But what they want is, let's just tell the truth. What's the truth? Tell me the facts, ma'am. Sometimes they can, you know, feel like you're being attacked, and they're not. They just want the, you know, give me the intensity. If I'm being intense and passionate about something with you, don't back down. Give it back to me. You know, they're very emotionally charged. So an unhealthy eight is, I didn't mean to say that.
Sorry, eights out there.
No, I love my eights. I love them. Well, my dad was an eight, and he died when he was 61, so he didn't know. We didn't know. But looking back, my mom and I have been like, oh my gosh. He wasn't, you know, mean and aggressive. He was passionate.
Right.
It's like, don't back down. Give it back to me. But nobody wanted to help people more than my dad. So the example I have is a very unhealthy eight would have been Joseph Stalin.
Okay.
But a healthy eight, one of the examples, the best I love, is Mother Teresa.
She was an eight.
She was an eight.
But should be a two.
That's what everybody thinks. It's because she was helping everyone. But boy, the people who knew her best will attest to, no, she would get it done. You did not challenge her if she was passionate about her ideas. This will happen. And so, you see the...
She also won a lot of battles as far as making changes in the world.
Absolutely.
So that's I can understand that.
And that's what a healthy eight can do.
Okay.
See, so there was kind of a...
I'm getting it. I'm so glad you're here.
A rough sketch of them. I like to use numbers. I call it love thy number because I've said before, whether you grew up with religion, know anything about the Bible... Almost everybody knows the phrase, love thy neighbor, right?
Yes.
Love thy neighbor. But the other half of that scripture is as thyself. So love thy neighbor, you can't do unless you love yourself first. I like numbers on the Enneagram because nobody gets offended by a number. Nobody says, I'm not a perfectionist. I'm not a challenger.
Yes.
I'm a two. I'm a seven. So that's kind of, to me, it's diffusing. And so I just did an Enneagram twist on it and said, instead of love thy neighbor, love thy number.
I like that.
That's where it came from.
I like that. Actually, it makes perfect sense. And I do see when you say perfectionist and when you label somebody like that, they do get their hackles up just a little bit. So I've been known to do that. in my past, not now.
Nobody likes to be labeled.
No. And I am enough is something that seems to be kind of a common theme. With everything you said, you know, I am enough is in the circles I kind of hang out in. It's I am enough.
Oh, well, Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. If you listen to this over again, go back and listen to it again and get the definitions. I kept hearing healthy, unhealthy. And you said health didn't have anything to do with you.
I know.
So you talked about, I forgot where I was going with that, but healthy and unhealthy. And then, you know, it was I am enough, because when you're on your healthier version of your number, it seems like you are saying, no matter what your number is, you're enough.
Yes. Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I got goosebumps all over there. So I like this. I've got to learn more. So are you going to be doing any classes anytime soon?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
I am. Yes, that's twice I've said it publicly now.
Am I not allowed to tell people about it?
Of course.
When are you doing a class?
I don't have a date.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're doing a class. All right. And for those who are listening out of Gwinnett County, it will be in Gwinnett County here in Georgia.
We have a place out in the country, in Decatur, which is east. We have a relatively large property that we use for gatherings. We're involved with a nonprofit, which is called Presence. And well, I'm not going to go into that right now. But just to say, the reason we have this big place, it's got, you know, 6 acres and 7 bedrooms and
fun.
A big meeting room. It's because we have people in all the time. And be careful what you ask for in the universe. Because, like, you know, forever ago in my 20s, I was like, oh, I'd love to run a bed and breakfast. Well, that's kind of what it is. We have guests in all the time. It's a think tank.
So fun. Yeah. Okay. Wow. I need an invitation.
Okay. You shall have one.
Okay. So you're going to be teaching this soon so I can sign up and know all about it and learn more. I mean, here I think I'm a know-it-all and I know nothing about this. So I'm learning so much today. All right. So you talked about the 9 types. We talked about the ups and downs of the 9 types. How does a person, I mean, I don't know how to ask this question. How does a person go through the information? Because I just heard so many different pieces of me in all of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I took the test and I came out of 2. And then I had other numbers. And then it said something about my wings.
Yeah.
And so there's all these different parts. So is there a way that I can get more into this, or anybody listening can get more into this and learn without being totally confused? I thought I knew when I coming in here, and now I'm a little bit more confused, to be honest.
That's
so
good.
Okay,
that's
well,
good.
Confusion is good.
It is, because it makes you ask questions.
Yes.
That to me, it's like if somebody could give me, you know, one definition or one sentence about, oh, Danae, this is who you are, period. I would feel like, well, that's it. So that's all there's to know. I think our life should be about questioning. What more is there? What more? So I would say really is going to a workshop. There's some great ones here in town. I hope I'm one of those at some point. But there's a book that a lot of people refer to called The Wisdom of the Enneagram.
Okay.
And it's Riso and Hudson. It's in the Enneagram world, we just call it the Big Blue Book. Everybody knows what it is. And it's a great dive. I said it earlier. When I found out what my core fear is and my core motivation, this just really clicked with me. The wings are whatever number is to your left and your right. So a wing is, you're kind of influenced by, if you were a 2.
Okay.
A 1 is on one side of you and a 3 is on the other.
Okay.
So you just kind of have a closer relationship with the numbers that are closest to you. But there's a whole, there's a thing called the instincts, which to me is more insightful than the wings. If I was you, I would, and you want to know more, once you hone in on what your type is, your number, I would find out what my instinct is. And the instincts are something we all have, period. Human beings, we either are social. Well, let me start at the very beginning. There's 3 instincts. One would be the sexual or the one-on-one. So think back to caveman or whatever, you know, our initial instinct was to have one-on-one relationship. So we procreate. And it's called sexual, and it doesn't just have to do with sex.
Right.
It's the one-on-one relationship.
Okay. So intimacy.
Yes. As you go into another instinct, now we have children and tribes and whatever, so we're more social than, I did this wrong. Self-preservation is the other one. So there's social, sexual, and self-preservation. And we don't have time to go into all of those. But your instinct, what's your heart reaction? If something is going on in your life, are you more attuned to the tribe? Are you more attuned to the one-on-one? Or are you a self-preservation?
Okay.
And self-preservation people are, I'm social, but a self-preservation type would be very concerned with comfort, food, how my environment functions. Do I have all the stuff I need?
Okay.
They're great on a camping trip.
Yeah, I bet.
So that's the other thing. Wings, instincts. It's an unbelievably exciting study. But it's just one. It's just a map.
Well, you've spent 10 years. So I don't expect to know this in 45 minutes.
No.
Nor can anybody listening. So it's just an introduction to make you ask more questions.
Yes. But I also think don't be overwhelmed with it. If you learn one thing that just makes a difference in your life, if you have one aha moment that says, oh, I see why I do that, then isn't your life better?
True.
You know, not everybody wants to be an architect, But we all want to cross the bridge. So just how do I get over there to the other side?
I like the way you put that. That's pretty good. You call the Enneagram a tool of compassion and empathy. Explain that a little bit. What does that mean? I consider myself empathic, which means I can kind of read a room and tell who's good, who's bad, who's happy, who's sad. And I can kind of own in a business. I could tell who needed something and who didn't, or who was unhappy with their whatever I sold them. So that, how does that compare to this? Well, or not compare, but.
No, it all goes together. Mm-hmm. So when I began to understand how somebody else feels valued, then I can speak more compassionately. And so, for instance, let's talk about the threes. They're very needful of being shown that we appreciate the success they have. So you don't want to be false with your compliments, but to understand and to speak to them knowing, I know where they're coming from, that they think their value is in what they do, then you're going to work harder to fill that need to be loved that has nothing to do with their success.
That makes sense. I can understand that. Okay.
And if somebody doesn't feel all the emotions, like if I'm with another seven, then I understand this is something you're having a hard time with. I'm not going to jump in and say, you know, well, let me just make you happy. When somebody doesn't want to be happy, not another seven, that was a bad thing. If I'm with somebody who's grieving, they don't need to be showered with sunshine.
I get that. So if you're at a funeral, don't be Perky Patty.
Exactly. Yes.
I get it.
And
okay.
The point is not to know everybody else. The point is to know you and say, oh, this is what I tend to do. And to say, maybe not everybody needs the ray of sunshine. Some people just need to be sit and cry with them.
I understand that. And I bet that when you figured that out, your exhaustion level went down.
Oh,
because you had to be exhausted trying to make everybody happy all the time.
Because I thought that was my job, was to be the party planner. And
I get that.
But I also, when I understood that somebody who has a need for things to be right, and so the ones that are, you know, that, like I said, sometimes they get labeled a perfectionist and they're not, but they have a strong sense of what's right and wrong. A lot of times they think they're the ones that have that information. And so that's where they would need to go in health that, you know what, maybe other people have right answers too. But if I understand that about somebody, that their need to be right has nothing to do with I'm wrong. Don't come in with my fire hose of, oh, here, I've got another way to do it. And you're doing that all wrong. You know what I'm saying? To be able to have compassion on the way other people think.
You know, when you said that, I thought of justice system, because some people have, I mean, my son's a good example. When he was growing up, it was, you know, there was right and there was wrong. And if it was not right and you didn't make it right, then he was going to make it right. And he ended up in trouble a lot because he just had this, you know, this is not right. And I said, well, you know, life's not always right and things aren't always fair.
Wow.
And he had this, you know, very young age, and he would, you know, he was the one that would beat up somebody for bullying. You know, he was that kid, but it got him in trouble as much as it got him. So I get that. So maybe he's leaning on the one side because he is very particular about right and wrong and this is right and this is not. So
ones tend to be very organized. They love, and I'll just say this, my daughter, I believe she's a one, and oh my gosh, she has the checklist, the packing, you know, everything is in order, but that makes her feel safe. So for me to come in and say, oh, let's just throw this together and go do it, that messes with her. So I know that now, and we have so much less conflict.
That makes sense.
So much less, because I don't try to fix it for her or tell her there's a better way. Yes, my anxiety level dropped a lot.
I bet it did. You know, it's a shame that people can't learn all these things, like, coming out of the gate. Like, when you're little. And, you know, parenthood would be so much easier if you could just understand the languages of your children, and they understood the language of you. And, you know, because you said, you know, your dad, you didn't know until he passed away what he was. And this is a really interesting study. And I think when you talk about healthy and unhealthy, that the mental health is so important to, you know, detoxing your life that you got to get the toxic thoughts out of your head, your language, and knowing how to communicate with people. Because some people may not be toxic. They may just not be communicating with you right.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So you may assume somebody's a toxic person when really they just need to be understood.
And don't we all?
I just need to be understood.
And I love that this is being taught in like Fortune 500 companies.
It's
being taught in universities. It's being taught in, yes, business teams are loving the Enneagram. Loving it. Because now you look at your team and go, oh, okay, I see. I see where you're coming from. You see where I'm coming from? And you begin to speak each other's language.
And how does it differ, though, from like the DISC and the 16 personalities? Mm-hmm. That's a new one I just took recently. How does it differ from all? I mean, is it just a different form or are they all just the same?
Well, I mean, think they're different. I think I'm not going to speak to DISC or any of those because I think they're probably very useful and helpful. The Enneagram is just really a self journey. And if you can become the healthiest form of you, then all of your relationships are going to benefit.
That's profound. I like that. That makes perfect sense. That might end up being a quote, that Danae.
Oh, dear.
I like to put quotes out on social media that, you know, somebody says something special. I'll give you credit.
I won't claim it.
Because everybody's going to hear it on this podcast, so I won't claim it. I mean, this has been awesome. Fast forwarded to the end of this and only listen to just this part. What would you want people to know about Know Thy Number?
Love Thy Number.
Did I say no? See, sister, know it all.
Yes. What I would want people to know is every single person on this planet is perfect. They are loved just for being. And when you understand that about yourself, that you really are just a perfect human being who's trying to find the path that gives them the most freedom in life, then our planet would just be a better place if we knew how wonderful we are. And you cannot love your neighbor until you love yourself. If you are empty, you have nothing to give.
Oh, wow. That's a great way to end this show. I think I love that. All right. Thank you guys for listening today. This is Danae King, and she is with Love Thy Number. You can look her up on Instagram and her website. She has a great podcast with her husband that is also Love Thy Number on her website. And I hope you guys will delve into this much further. I'm going to definitely do that. So maybe we can talk her into coming back on after I've studied a little bit more or I've gone to her class maybe. This is Cindy Pitts Gilbert. Have a nice day.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. This is the Dear Sister Know It All podcast. Thanks for listening. Live every moment, laugh every day, love beyond words. Bye, y'all.